go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They'd have everybody throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Get ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL season.
Go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Now I'm there inside the playbook for Thursday. Welcome into the program, everybody, here on Patriots.com radio.
We really need a camera in here.
I know. Would help. Well, we have cameras in here. They're just not ever active. Do they ever use these anymore?
Mondays.
Oh, for Patriots Monday they use it? Because they stream it? Why don't we just stream all of it?
No, they don't stream it. It's on demand.
Oh, it's on demand. I see. I got you. Yeah, well, they wouldn't want to stream this anyway. It's probably... Probably just as well. Some people have, you know, faces made for radio. We do welcome you inside the program today, and lots to get to as normal on a Thursday with the short work week. Right off the bat, we'll get into some of your emails, certainly. Predict the football game. You're going to predict the game. This is what we normally do on Thursday, so tell me what you think the final score of Sunday's Patriots-Cleveland Browns game will be. Will the Pats cover the 16.5, which was the spread I saw this morning, or 17 as the case may be? Will they win the game by 21-plus like they've won the other previous four games they've played? What will they limit Cleveland to? Will they be able to score 34 to 38 points? I mean, all these things are on the table. You can kind of put that up there. Will they show any mercy for Romeo Crennel? Frankly, I don't think so, even though I think we all – you know Romeo. We all like Romeo. We all expect Romeo. We all appreciate what he has done for this team during his time as a, you know, defensive standout for this program, coaching and scheming and helping the Patriots win three Super Bowl championships. But all's fair, right? All's fair. All's fair in love and war in football. So what do you think the game will turn out to be on Sunday? I want to get your score predictions here on Thursday. We will take a look at your emails. We've got several of you. There were some emails that came in late yesterday that you may have not had a chance to speak to yesterday's little nitpick issue. You can certainly sound off on that if you like. I've got some news and notes to go through in terms of the matchup for this week. A little bit later on in the program, we will hear from Romeo Crennel and also Jamal Lewis and their conference calls with members of the Patriots media. And Russell Baxter from ESPN will join us, as he normally does on Thursdays, to look at the Patriot matchup with Cleveland as well as the rest of the action in Week 5 around the league. So all of that is upcoming on the program. I heard just a short while ago coming in to the stadium for the program today, Chris Collinsworth. I know you guys know who Chris Collinsworth is, but for those that may not be quite as familiar with him, he's a former Cincinnati wide receiver. Was a pretty good one in his heyday. He does the studio analyst work on the Football Night in America broadcast on NBC on Sundays now, the Sunday night football game, and also as a part of the HBO Inside the NFL program. And has been doing that for several years. And I know Patriots fans are certainly aware of the fact that he has been rather outspoken against the Patriots and against Coach Belichick in particular, based on the whole Spygate story. And I know that there probably aren't too many Chris Collinsworth fans in New England or amongst Patriots followers, because he has steadfastly insisted upon the only thing that is fair, in his opinion, is for Coach Belichick to be suspended. That unless there's a suspension coming, that it's just you know, he got off too easy. And he just did an interview with Dale and Holly on WEEI that I was listening to on the way in here. And I thought that for the most part they did an okay job. But the one question that Dale and Holly did not get to ask that I was hoping that someone would sort of try to interject, and maybe it's because they just don't have this perspective that I think we do here. But the fact is that, you know, he did not back down at all from his statements, knowing that he was on Boston radio, So, you know, that gave me a little bit better perspective of on Chris Collinsworth. I appreciated that. I'm glad that he has the courage of his convictions and is going to stand up behind what he said. And he suggested as well that he does his homework. He suggested that, you know, he talked to several GMs and or coaches in front office around the league, and that the majority of them were, he said, irate over the fact that Belichick did not receive a suspension over the entire Spygate issue. And then when the point was brought up that, you know, and he brought into the equation, you know, there should have been a suspension involved, like with Pac-Man Jones and some of the other things going on. And of course, the point was brought up that, well, those guys committed crimes. What they did was against the law, as opposed to what Coach Belichick did, which was not a law. It was a rule within the confines of the NFL that was broken. And then he didn't back down from that at all. He basically said, well, but what Bill Belichick did speaks directly to the integrity of football, the spirit of fair play. And if you question some sleight of hand in the league, then do you not have a right to question almost anything that looks questionable? And, you know, in a sense, I actually think, you know, Chris Collinsworth is correct, although I still think what we're doing here, when you compare Bill Belichick's transgression with things like Pac-Man Jones, I think you're definitely dealing with apples and oranges. I don't think that you're talking about two same things. These athletes who commit these transgressions, they violate laws that you or I or anybody else would, you know, also get, you know, slapped with. But we're not in the NFL. So what Bill Belichick did is still different. And to try to compare it with what players' transgressions have done is not proper. It's not the same thing. And I think the other thing that never got asked that I was hoping would be asked, but again, it's probably because Dale and Holly and the guys at WEI don't have the perspective that we do here, is because they don't work for the team. And that is, I wanted them to basically try to work into the equation. Well, here's the thing. If you suspend Bill Belichick and suspend him for 4 weeks or 6 weeks or for the postseason, as he suggested, which I think is kind of ludicrous, but again, he's entitled to his opinion. What makes you think that's really going to hurt this team or this franchise? I think you and I and most people around here realize that you could suspend the head coach, but, you know, the head coach is kind of plugged in a system, and the system will kind of run itself. These guys are professionals. These coaches are professionals. They all go about their jobs. Someone will probably have to take over his duties, you know, for however much time he's supposed to be out of the office, so to speak. But you don't think for a minute that that job's not going to get done? Of course it's going to get done. And so I was hoping that, you know, well, isn't your point kind of moot? I mean, because if you knew anything about the workings of this team, you'd realize that, you know, missing Bill Belichick isn't going to affect them at all. In fact, I believe if you were listening during the week of Spygate here on this very, very program, I said that I hoped that the only thing that came out of this was his Belichick suspension, because that would hurt them the least. Obviously, we know what happened. He got hit with a substantial fine. The team got hit with a substantial fine, although he's of the opinion, and he, again, cited his sources, is that there are a lot of sources, his sources in the NFL were upset over the fine, that it wasn't really anything much more than a slap on the wrist. And his whole point was, well, because it doesn't affect the football team this year. The fact that they lost a draft pick or draft picks, depending on what happens here, doesn't affect them for this season. Of course, the same season in which these violations allegedly occurred. And that the only way that you could affect the Patriots for this season in 2007 would be to penalize the coach and suspend him. And so when I listened to it to that extent, I said, okay, I can see your point. I don't necessarily agree with it because, you know, quite frankly, I think the end result is the team is going to get off way easier. In fact, they'll get off considerably easier than they would have with the coach and the team paying a fine. And I think if you make them pay a fine and you suspend them for 4 weeks, I think you're going a little bit over the top. Because, again, a crime was not committed. I understand speaking to the integrity of the sport and the validity of the sport and the trustworthiness of the sport and the reliability of the sport. I understand that. But I think this sport has always operated on, you know, sort of a gentleman's agreement. I mean, in the spirit of good sportsmanship for the most part. Everybody bends rules. Everybody interprets rules the way that they sort of see fit. It's when they interpret them and they skew them when they don't mean the original intent, then I think that's when you're running into trouble. And I think really that's what happened with the Patriots here, but they didn't commit a crime. A felony did not occur. A misdemeanor did not occur. Nobody had to do jail time. Nobody had to pay a ticket. Nobody had to go to court. And so these are different issues. And I'm just as, you know, completely and totally convinced of my opinion, just as apparently Chris Collinsworth is with his. And if he thinks this is an entire issue that's based on the integrity of the sport, well, okay, that's fine. Then we may just have to agree to disagree where this is concerned. I wish that somebody had entered into that into the discussion, but Dale and Holly did not. So we'll unfortunately just have to leave it like that. And I do believe, and it was not my original intent to come on here today and dredge this whole thing up again, but having just listened to it, you know, and having, you know, a few minutes to kind of let it sit and stew in my brain here, I felt the need to say something about it simply because, you know, you as Patriots fans will undoubtedly realize that as this season progresses and as this team continues to progress and perhaps get better and get more dominant, there are going to be some people who will say, yeah, but they still cheat. I mean, just go on ESPN.com and look at any story about the Patriots. And they always, you know, have message boards down at the end of the story. They always put the message board link on there. And sometimes what they do is they let the first two or three comments, they try to get a sampling of what the message board is on a particular story. And every time there's a Patriots story, there's always somebody on there saying, yeah, well, you know, they're cheaters. What do you expect? They're cheaters. So you're going to have to face that for the rest of the year as a Patriots fan or a follower or observer. It's going to happen. And I just thought it would help here to just inject some perspective into it all, really, to be honest with you. Or as I guess as Paul says, some homerism. It's not really being a homer. I'm just, you know, kind of looking at it. We look at it from a different point of view here. And maybe it's because we're so close to the forest we can't see the trees, like the old adage goes. But I really believe this to be true. They're different issues, what Belichick did and what players who get suspended from the league do. And even Rodney Harrison, for that matter. It's a different issue. Rodney did something that is illegal. It's not, you know, tested for. But, you know, the consumption of HGH is still illegal. He didn't get caught with it, so that's why he's not doing, you know, any, you know, criminal time. But the league did suspend him. And Rodney has already said, and very eloquently, I might add, and you heard it here on the program yesterday, he made a poor choice. If he had it to do over again, he would wish that he did not make as poor a choice. We all make mistakes. You know, you make it, we all make mistakes, and we all have to stand up for it. And I think, for the most part, people appreciate the fact that Rodney has not shied away from this. Rodney has stood up for it, and he said, okay, I did this. I'm going to try to move on. I hope everybody else can, too. Why, then, in this instance, do we seem to have people like Chris Collinsworth and others not able to move on from this issue, especially when no crime was committed? Is it proper, even, for a guy like Chris Collinsworth to sort of carry this torch of integrity for the National Football League? See, that's where I think he's going a little bit overboard here. You know, this is a game, and for Collinsworth to think that during his time, first of all, if during his time he didn't come across any sort of cheating or, shall I say, rule bending, then he really is a goody two-shoes. You got to be kidding me. He never saw somebody pop a greenie? I mean, really? Are you kidding me? During the era in which he played? When amphetamines were prevalent? No way. I'm not buying that. And you're telling me, and he's telling me that he never saw that and never, not one of his teammates ever did that. He's lying. He's lying. So I still, even though I understand and I appreciate the fact that he has courage of his convictions and he came on to a show that he knew he was going to get hammered on, and although he really didn't get hammered. But, you know, there was a little back and forth between him and Michael Holly to begin with. You know, and I thought at least Michael and Dale were fair. They didn't just come after him with a, you know, with a hatchet. Which is, you know, you can have civil discourse here even though you disagree with the person you're bringing on the radio. And plus, you know, Collinsworth had to know what he was getting into. I just, you know, there was a side to the story that didn't get out. There was a perspective to the story that did not get out. This team would be fine if Bill Belichick was suspended in that particular instance, and that's the part that was missing here. You know, I thought that the punishment probably fit the crime based on if you have to use, you know, those player transgressions as a bench watermark, as something to compare to. Okay, fine, whatever. It's still different things, but if you feel like, you know, the fine, the steep fine, you know, and the stripping of a draft choice is, you know, well, I'll put it to you this way. It ain't going to happen again. Patriots won't allow it to happen again. So I think in that regard, the punishment fit the crime. Patriots are already going to pay a huge PR hit for this throughout the entire year. And Bill Belichick may, in fact, be, you know, dealing with this the rest of his football career. He's going to have this little asterisk on his bio for the rest of his career now. So that is the price that he is paying. So the punishment fit the crime? Yeah. And for someone to continue to sort of lament over the fact that he did not get suspended is a little ridiculous. Just my two cents worth. If you have any comments on that, I would love to hear from you. Webradio@patriots.com, the email address. Webradio, all one word, webradio@patriots.com. Telephone number today, 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. Thursdays are always a good day to pick up the phone and call in if you have a few moments. Obviously, even better for your emails. We want you to predict the score, so let's get after it. Is it 38-17, which is what I'm kind of leaning to, as long as we're in that range? Do they score a little more? Do they allow Cleveland to score a little more? I mean, Cleveland's got pretty good offense. They're like 11th in the league in total offense after the first 4 weeks. Is there some thought to being gentlemanly with Romeo Crennel? I personally don't believe that for a minute. But what do you believe? What do you think? And what should the Patriots do, especially with a short work week? Webradio@patriots.com. The matchup with Cleveland overall is actually not very long-lived. I'm sure many of you have been reading up on this, but this is the 21st time. The Patriots have won 5 of the last 6 games that they have played against the Browns overall. 3 straight, including, this goes back to 2001. We tend to think of things in the quote-unquote Super Bowl era around here, which, of course, would have to begin with 2001. They played, actually, these two teams played 5 times in a 6-year span from 1999 to 04, but they haven't gone against each other for the last 3 years. This is the second visit that Cleveland has ever made to Gillette Stadium. The only other visit that they have made here at Gillette was back in 2003. You might recall that was a rather lackluster 9-3 win for the Pats. Battle of field goals in that one. Teams have met once in the playoffs, and that's when Bill Belichick was coaching Cleveland. And they beat the Patriots on New Year's Day in 1995. I remember that one very well, in fact. So the history overall here is that, you know, games have been fairly close. The Patriots have had a slight edge, with the exception of that game in 1995. Overall, though, the Patriots are just 4 wins and 5 losses against the Browns all-time in Foxborough. Browns lead the overall series 11 wins to 8 for the Patriots. So, and then, of course, 1 in the playoffs. The Browns won that one in 1995, so 12-8, actually, if you count the playoff game. And it's just in recent years, since 2001, that the Patriots have had success on the football field against this particular franchise. Of course, Romeo Crennel returning faced the team that he spent 8 years as defensive coordinator or coaching the defensive line and then later as defensive coordinator, starting with that 2001 season for the Pats. If you were wondering, Coach Belichick is 2-0. In his first games against former assistants who have since become head coaches. He beat Nick Saban's Miami Dolphins in 05, and he beat Eric Mangini's Jets in 06. And the first time he faced former assistants. So this is his first time to face Romeo Crennel in that particular capacity as a head coach. This is the second of 4 games that the Patriots will play this year against teams from the AFC North Division. The last time that they played four teams from the AFC North was back in 04, and they were 4-1. We mentioned that a little bit earlier this season. That included a win over Pittsburgh in the AFC Championship game that year. Of course, they went on to win the Super Bowl. They're 11-2. 11-2 against the North Division overall since 2001, including the three wins over Cleveland in that time span. Of course, the Pats beat the Bengals, also in the AFC North, 34-13 on Monday night this week. So there's just a little, you know, short history just to kind of bring you up to date on where things stand heading into the game on Sunday. Of course, Coach Belichick spent quite a bit of time in Cleveland. He was the head coach of the Browns from the early to the mid-90s. Five seasons overall, 91 and 95. He took over the Browns when they were coming off of what was, I believe, their worst record in franchise history. I think he took over the team in 1991, them coming off of a 3-13 record. And by the time before he left, he had them to, oh, gosh. I believe the Browns, let's see, as I look here, yep, in 1994, he led the Browns to an 11-5 record and a playoff spot. The 11 wins in 1994, by the way, are tied for the second highest single-season win total in the 58-year history of the Browns franchise. Now, that includes, of course, before the former Cleveland franchise moved to Baltimore. This current Browns franchise, of course, is an expansion team that just assumed the Browns' name and, of course, all of the Browns' records. You'll, of course, recall that when the former Browns team, led by Art Modell, moved to Baltimore, they had to leave all of their records behind. So, in effect, looking at the history books, it's Baltimore that's the franchise team, even though it really did not start out that way. And in that 1994 season in which Coach Belichick led Cleveland to that 11-5 record, the Browns allowed just 204 points for the entire 16 games. That was the fewest amount allowed in the league that year, fewest points allowed by a defense ever coached by Bill Belichick. So that 1994 team was pretty stout. And the fact is that he came in, and even though he was perhaps a public relations nightmare and did not get along very well with the media or the fans during his time in Cleveland, fact is the results on the field, for the most part, spoke for themselves and still speak for themselves. He turned around a moribund franchise and was able to put it together for him before he ended up coming this way. And so there's a little history. And I think perhaps, you know, you wouldn't be human if you didn't want to always try to give back, shall we say, to a team that no longer employs you or to an organization that no longer employs you. You always want to try to do that. You always want people to see and say, wow, you know, geez, I wish we still had the guy. Well, you should have thought of that, you know, 12 years ago, whatever the case may be. I don't want to say that there's a grudge, because I do believe that people move on in life. Some people do hold grudges. Some people hold grudges longer than others. I don't necessarily believe that there's a grudge here, per se. You know, I'm not privy to that information. I'll just say that, you know, you wouldn't be human if you didn't want to make sure that you went out and proved yourself and continued to prove yourself whenever you had the opportunity to do it. And knowing that this coach and this football team basically personifies the image that their coach wants them to display on the field, then, you know, and we know that this team definitely likes to get after it, then I think the coach likes to get after it too. So that's the most notable connection between the sides coming in this Sunday. You know, I was looking at a Scouts, Inc. breakdown of the Patriots, not so much of the game this weekend, but, you know, Scouts, Inc., you know, does a lot of the scouting stuff for the NFL and several other, you know, leagues around the country. In fact, you can even get some of Scouts, Inc. stuff if you are on ESPN.com and you happen to be one of their insider subscribers. They allow you access to some of the information that, you know, Scouts, Inc. feeds them, you know, for that specific purpose. So I was looking at some Scouts, Inc. stuff, trying to see what the professional scouts are saying would be the Patriots' weaknesses at this point. And in all honesty, I have to admit, I was pretty surprised. I was pretty surprised. Scouts, Inc. had very little to say. I thought for sure I mean, I really thought for sure that they would come up with this or that or X or Y. I thought for sure they'd come up with, you know, something about the kicking game, something about the running game, something. And, you know, in paraphrasing here what Scouts Inc. had to say about, you know, the perceived weaknesses of the Patriots at this point in time. Now, they did say that, you know, barring injuries, you know, playing a factor into their superior depth right now later this season. And right now, and again, paraphrasing here what Scouts Inc. has to say, right now there just are very few weaknesses on this team. That's something even that Chris Collinsworth mentioned in his conversation on the radio here in Boston, in New England, earlier this afternoon. He said, you know what, all things being aside, this is as deep a team and as skilled a team as has existed in the salary cap era of the NFL. And I said that here on the program yesterday, kids, in case you missed out. Said, you know, honestly, after watching what happened on Monday night, this is the best team that the salary cap era in the NFL has seen. So we're talking about the post-Dallas Cowboys, for the most part, teams of the early 90s. Best team in the last 15 years, without a doubt, in the National Football League. Best team, top to bottom. Roster-wise, skill position-wise, depth-wise, ability-wise, everything. Best team that the salary cap era has seen anybody put on the field. So what this means now, of course, is that, well, if the Patriots can do it, then why can't another team do it? If you're looking at it from a Colts perspective or a Cowboy perspective or, you know, a Bills or a Dolphins perspective. Well, and that, of course, is going to be the benchwater mark. Now, the Patriots have risen the bar, and so now, actually, there should be teams around the NFL thanking the Patriots for doing this because, quite frankly, now everybody else has got something to work toward, and they're going to work hard toward trying to reach this kind of a pedestal. The challenge now will be for the Patriots to stay up on this pedestal, to play king of the mountain or king of the hill and not get knocked off. That'll be the challenge. And not only to remain king of the hill, but then, you know, to continue to separate yourself from, you know, lack of a better phrase, from the peons below. You know, that's the challenge the Patriots are fighting right now. And Collinsworth even said as such, you know, he said, you know, this Patriots football team is very good. And, you know, if they continue on the role that they're on, you know, it may be very, very difficult for teams to stop them. Although he, like, you know, most everyone else, is opined that the Cowboys in another week and the Colts coming up in November are the most likely candidates to put a blemish on the record, simply because, you know, the Patriots are going to have to play both of those teams on the road. And then he briefly mentioned the other two spots, you know, Baltimore and Pittsburgh, later in the season. But that he thought that if the Patriots are able to get through Dallas and Indianapolis and stay undefeated, then we might have to actually seriously entertain the whole 16-0 scenario for the regular season. I don't think anybody would disagree with that at this stage of the game. So this team, each week, is going to find itself trying to put on some blinders, try to focus on the task at hand, continue to, you know, try to keep out things like what we're doing, talking about on down the line, looking ahead, trying to not discredit, but just basically ignore fans and media questions about the possibility of staying undefeated and continuing the string. And, you know, even more so, this team is going to be built for putting on blinders and trying to go week to week. So you'll hear that mantra, I'm sure, from now till whenever the streak finally does end. That'll be the key thing here for the Patriots and for everybody to remember. I have to admit, I just marveled at what Scouts Inc. said or didn't say about a weakness. There are no perceived weaknesses with this team. The one thing that I think that they recognize that I sort of agree with, obviously they talked a little about red zone defense troubles. The fact is the Patriots, we mentioned this during yesterday's program as well, Patriots have allowed the opponents to enter their 20-yard line 6 times this year in 4 games, and they have allowed all 6 of those possessions to result in touchdowns. So being 6-for-6 against in the red zone is something that obviously is going to need quite a bit of work. Percentage-wise, that's not good. That's got to improve. If it doesn't improve, then, well, then, you know, you could have some problems on down the line when you're facing teams of, you know, superior quality. That's one thing you need to look at. And they also mentioned, and I like this reasoning. It's a little out there. It's a little hard to sort of, you know, really visualize. But hang with me here for just a second. Really, the way teams are going to have to try to go about attacking the Patriots and scoring on them defensively, now that Rodney Harrison's coming back into the fold, and now that, you know, and of course Richard Seymour's probably a couple of weeks away at minimum. But the way that you beat the Patriots is you try to isolate them in one-on-one situations. You have to find where the man-to-man matchups are. In other words, you know, don't throw into double teams. Make sure that you're watching, you know, zones and blitzes and you know, cover two scenarios and things like that. You want to find where there's individual coverage, like a linebacker on a tight end, or a corner that might be a half step behind a wide receiver. You got to find somebody that'll stretch the field. I still think that a team that has the ability to stretch the field offensively can give this team some trouble. But Adalis Thomas is the huge X factor in all of this. And because, you know, he can play inside linebacker, he can play outside linebacker, he can line up at the defensive line and rush you, he can probably play safety. Heck, who knows, he might even be able to play a little cover corner. I wouldn't put it past him. You know, you can line him up in so many different positions. Fact is that the Patriots defensively, and this is where their versatility on defense really comes into play here, kids. The Patriots' versatility doesn't allow teams to stop and think about the kind of substitution patterns that they should be making, because they have so much flexibility and so much versatility defensively, it's hard for a team to be able to say, all right, what package are we going to bring in to attack, say, Adalis Thomas in middle linebacker? Well, you know, you're going to bring in this, and then all of a sudden you bring that package in, and all of a sudden he's lined up on the edge. Or he's playing off in coverage. It's very hard to match up. So while, you know, you can say this about any defense in the NFL, you can say this about any football team anywhere, college, pro, peewee, if you isolate a team in man-to-man situations, you're going to have a chance to beat them if you have superior personnel in that matchup. Speed against size, that kind of thing. And that's really the only way that you can look at the Patriots defense and say, okay, here's a way for a team to beat us. You've got to be able to find a way to isolate and create man-on-man opportunities. Because the way that this versatility for this Patriots defense matches up with people, it just doesn't give teams a chance to bring on the proper packages, personnel-wise, in an effort to try to create those man-to-man opportunities. That is the genius behind what the Patriots are doing on the football field. So I wanted to bring you that little bit of insight because, you know, I respect those guys' opinion. I mean, these guys spend their time. This is what they do 365 days a year. They scout. That's why it's called Scouts, Inc. They look at videotape, they watch games, they talk to coaches, they talk to coordinators, and then they give you their summarization. And they try to break it down for you. It's good stuff. It's really good stuff. If you haven't ever, you know, done the insider thing on ESPN.com, and believe me, I'm not necessarily trying to sell a product here, but you know, it gives you a good perspective. It gives you some real football perspective. I also like, you know, a couple of other sites you can get to for nothing. You know, you can go to Cold Hard Football Facts, which I'm sure a lot of you are aware of. That's obviously a very good site as well, and a couple of others that are out there. In fact, let's do this. While you're talking about your game predictions, okay, since I've kind of gotten around to this, because I was really somewhat surprised by what I saw on Scouts, Inc., in terms of trying to break the Patriots down here. What is a football site other than this one, other than Patriots.com, that you like to go to for your football information? Do you get good inside information? Do you get entertaining information? Do you get things that you agree or disagree with? Does it cause you to email and, you know, sign on or log on to a message board and have to leave a comment? I mean, what are your favorite football sites, I guess, is what I'm looking for. I'd be interested to know a little bit about where you go and what you like about these particular sites, as I've told you what I like here. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. So give me your football sites where you get your inside info. Also, don't forget to give me your prediction for Sunday. Score predictions for Sunday's game. Does anybody dare think that the Browns will stay within the 16-17 point spread? Is it possible? Is it conceivable? Does anybody have a thought one way or the other? We got any Browns fans listening? Want to hear what you have to say. John Rook in here on a Thursday. We will have Romeo Crennel. We will have Jamal Lewis. We will have Russell Baxter. Upcoming Inside the Playbook.
Hunger stands no chance against the new Bacon Lover Supreme Omelet Breakfast Sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. Supreme omelet egg with crisp, thicker-cut pepper bacon and Colby Jack cheese. Hurry in today for a whole lot of sizzle, because this irresistible combination of flavor won't be around forever. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Dunkin' Donuts. America runs on Dunkin'. For a chance to win big, visit DunkinDonuts.com today to win great football prizes. Prizes include 42-inch plasma TVs, signed official game balls, and JetBlue flights. And don't forget to try a Bacon Lover Supreme Omelet Breakfast Sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. Price and participation may vary. No purchase necessary to enter to win. Offer valid 8/20 to 9/30. Must be 18 years or older to participate. Must be a U.S. citizen. Limited time offer. Visit DunkinDonuts.com for official rules and a chance to win.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demulus Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Hey, this is Hall of Famer John Hanna. Let me tell you about the first ever Game with the Greats. Have you ever wondered what former football players talk about when we're watching the game? Well, now you can find out for yourself at the first ever Game with the Greats. On October 14th at Gillette Stadium, watch the Patriots take on the Cowboys in the Fidelity Investments Clubhouse, along with me, a bunch of my teammates, and other Patriot alumni. Guys like Andre Tippett, Steve Nelson, Steve Grogan, and Pete Brock will be there with you to enjoy the game and just hang out. Tickets are limited because they're only $25. Visit the Patriots.com homepage and click on alumni for more information. We're all going to be at the Game with the Greats. Where will you be?
Hi, this is Richard Seymour. If you're a big Patriots fan, show your team pride and win great prizes by ordering your Patriots specialty license plate. Team Rules says your car has to be registered in Massachusetts to be eligible. When you place your order, you have the chance to win Patriots tickets and memorabilia. Proceeds from the sales of the license plates go to the New England Patriots Charitable Foundation. Now that's worth driving for. To score your new set, apply online or in person at your local RMV or log on to Patriots.com for more details. Show your team spirit, give to a great cause, and get your Patriots license plate today.
Your New England Revolution have been one of the hottest teams in Major League Soccer all season long. Summer may have turned to fall, but the soccer action is still hot at Gillette Stadium. Taylor Twellman.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pat Noonan.
Shot, and it's in! Patrick Noonan!
And the rest of the Revs are looking to finish 0-7 strong and get revved up for the playoffs. Get to Gillette Stadium as the Revs make their push for the playoffs in a third straight trip to MLS Cup. With a few pivotal regular season home games left, it's not too late for you to be a part of the action. Tickets for the rest of the season are on sale now and start at just $18, making Revolution Soccer a fun and affordable day for the whole family. Call the Revolution Ticket Office today at 1-877-GET-REVS or Ticketmaster at 617-931-2222 and get your ticks, get your kicks, and get the Revolution.
Get your kicks, the New England Revolution.
Inside the playbook, back inside the playbook for Thursday. Web radio at Patriots.com. Russell Baxter from ESPN will join us here in just a few minutes. We'll also get to...
Baxter!
He's on the way. We'll also get to Romeo Crennel and Jamal Lewis. And we have also gone inside the locker room for you today. Love doing this every week. And we went inside the Patriots locker room today just before practice. They're out there practicing right now as we speak. But we've got 7 players for you to hear from today, talking about preparing and such and getting ready for the Cleveland Browns. So that also is coming up a little bit later on here in the program for you today. We'll get to a couple of emails, and then we'll get to Russell Baxter here in a couple of moments. Fact is, again, you've got to, you know, bring on these predictions now, because once we get into this stuff, may not be much of a chance to get your scores in. So get your score predictions in for Sunday. And what's your favorite football site? What do you get your scoop from? What do you get your info from?
Patriots.com.
I said in addition to Patriots.com. I think we all realize that we've all got other sites that we do try to, like, get to every once in a while, just to see how the other half lives, just to get a little bit different perspective. So I'm curious to know where you go to get your football info in the NFL. And if it's Patriots.com, then by golly, say so. It'd make everybody happy, right? Excuse me. But I'd be interested to know what you're looking at and when you go to it and what you think is good and what you think is not so good about some of the other, you know, football sites and some of the information that you find out there. Of course, yesterday, right after we were done with the program, Patriots released the fact that they have re-signed tight end Marcellus Rivers. And they put tight end David Thomas on the IR. Thomas re-hurt his foot. Of course, he broke the foot during training, off-season training. Did come back onto the field a couple of weeks ago and then re-injured it this past week, this past Monday, against Cincinnati. So they've put Thomas now on IR, so he's gone for the year, the second-year tight end out of Texas. And so Marcellus Rivers has been re-signed to remain with the team for the rest of the year. That was a roster move that was announced just after 4 o'clock Eastern time yesterday. And then, of course, as far as the injury report for this week, Dan Copen, the Patriots starting center, did not take part in practice yesterday because of an injured ankle. We should get the update on the injury report. If we get it before 4 o'clock Eastern time today, then we always pass it on to you here inside the playbook. But sometimes if it's after 4 o'clock, what I tell you is just, you know, refresh your browser, and it ends up getting posted right here on Patriots.com if you're trying to figure out who the Patriots have available or who they might not have available for Sunday's game, especially if you have any of these guys, I guess, on your fantasy teams. Teams that or players that were limited in participation yesterday, Colvin with an ankle, Randall Gay with a thigh, of course, Maroney in his groin. Of course, we know that Maroney did not play and ultimately did not suit up on Monday against the Bengals. Stephen Neal's shoulder, Dante Stallworth his knee, and Kelly Washington's hamstring, which has kept him out of action for a couple of weeks now. Tom Brady mentioned right shoulder, as usually he is every week, but he did have full participation in practice yesterday. So that was the late injury report from Wednesday, and we'll see if we get an update on matters as well. But certainly somewhat problematic is Dan Copen and an injured ankle, and he did not take part in practice at all yesterday. We'll see if that's updated any further today. And this, of course, is where, as well, a lot of that versatility we've been talking about that the Patriots have, you know, especially in that offensive line, comes into play. This team does have that kind of versatility now, where if a guy like Copen has to miss a week because he's tweaked an ankle, and hopefully that's all it is, now you move somebody else in, whether it's Russ Hochstein, I believe that would be who would come in and play. You know, how much do you miss? And to the Patriots' credit, the answer is not very much, because they've got guys who can play multiple roles, not only in that particular unit, but multiple roles on other areas of this football team. And that, of course, adds to the overall depth, which has certainly become a huge measure of the overall strength of this team, is the depth. Yeah, Hochstein is listed as the second-team center. And he goes back and forth between all three positions. He can play center, guard, or tackle. And that depth is solid there because usually the ability doesn't fall off much. All right, let's sneak in a couple of emails and then we'll get Russell on the phone here. Dave from the Philippines writes, John, don't mind the PFW guys. When I said I go to bed when Patriots Playbook comes on, it's only because your show starts at 2 a.m. here and I have to go to work for a client in the morning. It's nothing to do with you or the show. Well, I appreciate that, Dave, even though he's not listening to this right now.
How about
now.
Him staying up till 2, though?
That's impressive. I got one word
he
for
called.
Him. He called. Did he call? Dave, I got one word for you when you listen to this later. Podcast. Right? Podcast. Okay, Ken writes, Ken, our friend from Huntington Beach, California, Patriots 34, Browns 14, covers the spread, wins by 20 points, keeps the opposing team at 14 or under, just as all four previous games did. So So he says 34-14. It's interesting to note, however, that at least according to current record, the Browns are the best team the Patriots have played thus far this year. It's true. At 2-2 coming in, and we talked a little about that yesterday with Steve King, who writes for ClevelandBrowns.com. But, you know, they have won a couple of games. They did win a game last week against Baltimore that I'm not so sure too many people outside of Cleveland thought that they would win, and won it by 2 touchdowns, 27-13. Ken says, additionally, with Copeland injured and Maroney having sat out last week, though, since it was a game time decision, I don't think he'll be out this week. Well, we'll see. He says, the team is in for a challenge. Finally, there's definitely an argument to be had that trading Charlie Fry, who was their opening quarterback in week one, has lit a fire under the feet of the Browns and shown them what's going to happen if they don't step it up and play. It's actually a pretty good assessment. He says, again, Collinsworth is a pompous ass and needs to retire from TV. Does Harrison play this week? Is the one-week roster exemption only good if Harrison remains inactive for the week? Does the team currently have a spot open for Harrison, or will it need to get rid of someone? I'm thinking they're going to wait right until, you know, they've got to set the roster for the game. So it'll be Saturday before that decision is ultimately made. I'd actually be a little surprised if he's inactive. I think that Rodney Harrison, if he's able to play, I think they're going to ask him to come back and play. And I'm sure they're, you know, in the process of figuring that out by watching practice this week. And to answer your question about roster spot open, no, I don't think so. So someone would have to, you know, be waived and then hopefully brought back on the practice squad. But that's probably what has to happen. Ken continues with, the Cincinnati game really gave me a lot of confidence in the secondary, and I found myself impressed with Hobbs especially and with Gay. Asante also seems to be getting back into game shape. Merriweather, however, worried me, not because of his ability, he's a rookie, not a four-year vet, but because he seemed to be a bit overly violent in the Bengal game and showed me some lack of discipline. I honestly think he got away with a cheap shot late hit that should have been called. Yeah, we talked a little about that yesterday too, Ken, and frankly, there were a few other emailers that also expressed the very same sentiment. Fact is, you know, he's a young guy. He's got a lot of, you know, as you said, emotion, and he's trying to make a name for himself. He knows he doesn't have too many opportunities out there, and maybe, you know, he let his emotion get the best of him in that particular instance, but he did not get a penalty, and so in this particular instance, is, you know, cold and as calculating as it may sound, no harm, no foul. But I'm sure that someone said something to him somewhere. AJ in Columbia, South Carolina. I think the game's going to be 38-3 Patriots. And I have a question. Do you think the Patriots would be this far without Randy Moss? You know, that's actually the first time anybody's asked me that question. Would they be this far along, what, offensively? Would they be this far overall without a guy like Moss? You know, I think it's a fair question. I don't know that I can answer it. I would tell you that I think that they would also, I think they would be 4-0. I don't think that they'd be putting up, you know, 34-38 points a game. I think that they'd be putting up close to that. But let's face it, he scored what? 7 touchdowns? 5 touchdowns? How many touchdowns does Randy Moss have? Off the top of my head. I don't know. 6 touchdowns, right? 7 touchdowns. I was right the first time. So, obviously, those throws would have to go to somebody else. How many other people would have turned those into touchdowns? Or do they even run those plays for the end zone? I mean, you can think of a couple of instances that, you know, maybe another receiver doesn't get to, like, you know, the 45-yarder in the last home game. I mean, you know, maybe somebody else doesn't catch up to that ball. So, to answer your question, yes, but maybe not as impressively. I hope that answers your question. Andy in Vermont says, the media has really kept this going in terms of the whole Spygate thing. And, yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. But, again, you know, first time you have a guy, have a chance to get a guy like Chris Collinsworth, who really has, I guess, sort of been villainized here in New England by his steadfast refusal to give it up. And the guys on EEI were able to finally get a hold of him today, and he knew what he was stepping into, in case you missed the opening part of the program today, and I kind of mentioned something about this. But fact is that, you know, you still have to ask him the questions because nobody's really asked him about it. In fact, he even said as much to Holly, to Michael Holly and to Dale earlier today, Dale Arnold on WEEI in Boston. He said, you know what, after that week, I haven't even had anybody ask me about the subject after that week was over. So I get the impression that other people around the country have moved on with this. And maybe it's just us that keep hanging on to it. I would allow for that. But don't be surprised to see it keep cropping up, you know, the more that this team wins. Andy says, let's see, ESPN's first take segment had a segment about the Pats asking, Patriots, America's team or America's villain? I think they need to do some research. Jimmy Johnson and Mike and Mad Dog admitted the use of video the same way, even described ways he did it. Yeah, we talked about that on yesterday's show, too. Putting a camera in the press box and pointing at the defensive coaches and talked about learning it 16 or 17 years before from one of Marty Schottenheimer's coordinators. I also wanted to bring up a stat they used on Monday night, talking about outscoring an opponent by 20 or more in the first four games. They went back to the 20s, some team no one had ever heard of, and they played semi-pro teams. So basically, in the modern era of football, no team has ever started this dominant. Andy says, wow. Well, we all know that those bandwagoners are going to go back to their team and root against the Pats. Stay strong, Patriots Nation. All right. Well, you know, that's a good point, Andy, and I'm glad you brought it up, actually, because I remember glancing at that, and then I didn't get a chance to see that graphic enough. They never went back to it. And I heard somebody talking about it a couple of days ago, so I'm glad you brought it up. The fact is that, you know, nobody in the modern era of football has started off a season as dominantly as the Patriots have. And so that sort of begs the question, now, where do you go from here? Is there the ability to go up? Is there the ability to improve? Is there the ability to, you know, kind of reach a different level in terms of what you're striving to achieve on the football field? I think it's probably all, you know, legitimate questions. Your thoughts are welcome. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. All right, let's get to the guru, shall we? Yeah, let's get to the guru here. What do we have for him today? Another numbers. Another little numbers thing for you, Russell. See if you can figure out what this one is. It takes too long to get into it.
Well, you're about 6 years too late.
Yeah, exactly.
This would be so that intro.
2001 Space Odyssey. But I'll wager that it's the first time you've ever been introduced to 2001 Space Odyssey.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say.
Russell Baxter, the NFL research coordinator.
It will be the last.
You know what? It's scary.
Yes.
And Gary, you can chime in here as well. You know, all those songs we thought we'd never think of when we were a kid, like Party Like 1999 and 2001?
Right.
All blown us right by, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely. Never thought we'd ever get there. In fact, we thought maybe the world would even end by that time.
My computer's probably not supposed to be working, isn't it?
That's right.
The millennium?
Not supposed to be working. Yeah, here we go. All right, see? Look how quickly you can call that stuff up. What do you think, Russell? Should the Patriots be partying like 1999, or there's still a little work to do?
I think, wouldn't they prefer to party like it was 2001? That was the year they won the Super Bowl.
For the first time, that's right. Absolutely. Oh, always got to get a little Prince in here.
1999 was, I believe, Pete Carroll's last year. So.
Yes, it was. It definitely was.
Yeah.
What about Monday's game against the Bengals?
It's football time.
It's football time. What about the Bengals game on Monday night impressed you in particular? Anything?
Well, I think it became very, to me, apparent very early on that the Patriots, who, you know, can do this to a team, and they've done it for years, actually, they seem to zap the Bengals' enthusiasm sooner than I expected it to be. Now, there was one little surge there where they got a little heat on Brady, and didn't sack him, but they got a little heat on him. He threw a pick over the middle, set up Cincinnati, I think, only touchdown. But then with the interception late in the half, which seems to cause all kind of hell between Carson Palmer and Chad Johnson, Cincinnati was, fairly lifeless in the second half, to be honest with you. A couple of times Carson moved them down the field via the pass. They never got a running game going. That wasn't a surprise with Rudy Johnson out. The Patriots exerted their will on Cincinnati. And while they didn't physically beat them up like they did the year before, which we talked about last week,
mm-hmm.
seemed like they mentally beat them up this time.
Yeah, I kind of got that impression. I got that impression as well that, once you see, Carson Palmer and Chad Johnson arguing with each other, going off the field at halftime, that game was pretty much over for all practical purposes.
My guess, that Hall of Fame jacket is somewhere in mothballs right now.
It better be, right? It better be. Well, it was impressive enough, but I think we also realized that the Bengals were somewhat limited defensively. I mean, they have, I don't think, do they have any linebackers left on the roster after
what
we saw?
Yeah, but I don't think Bill Berge and Reggie Williams count, do they?
No, probably not.
Yeah.
No.
Well, they could have needed them to suit up. And those things happen. They're, you know, they happen for all teams and so on. You learn to adjust. New England appropriately took advantage of that situation.
Right.
But I think he expected a little more out of Cincinnati's offense. And I know they've got, you know, they're a little banged up in that department as well. But I just lacked an air of enthusiasm with the Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you were going to cut some of the crowd down, but even the crowd got taken out of it, I thought, fairly early and so on. So it was another workmanlike effort by the New England Patriots. You just keep cruising along here.
Before we then look at the Patriots and the Browns for this week, as far as you know, week five around the league, a couple of interesting matchups that I kind of wanted to jump right into. Number one is your game on Monday night, which has the Dallas Cowboys, a Patriot opponent in a couple of weeks now, going to Buffalo and taking on a Buffalo team that finally got its first win last week. And I wonder that if you know, maybe Trent Edwards might be Tom Brady, Drew Bledsoe redone.
Well, I mean, there's obviously a long way to go before that, but I think it sounded like the Bills themselves were fairly impressed with what they saw. The rookie at a Stanford third-round pick held his own, didn't make any huge mistakes, played within himself, you know, let Buffalo's components. They played as a team, Buffalo, and Buffalo had, you know, they had an up-and-down first three games. They lost a heartbreaker to Denver. They got pushed around a little by Pittsburgh and New England, mm-hmm. And this was a much-needed win over the Jets. And, you know, they let Chad Pennington nibble their way up and down the field at times, but, you know, Chad Pennington, that's his story for another time, just really can't seem to make the big plays downfield unless it's a short pass that turns into something. And I think Buffalo is prepared for that. And we said it a couple weeks ago, Marshawn Lynch runs very, very hard. Very, very hard. And he's got a very, very bright future in this league.
Yeah. Dallas Cowboys, are they as good as 4-0 would indicate they are right now? And, you know, I guess comparatively speaking, you know, we talk about how, you know, Green Bay is somewhat surprising with their 4-0 start. But, you know, the Cowboys look to still have at least some question marks defensively, but they certainly have it going on all cylinders on offense.
Well, I think they do have some question marks defensively, but the case in point here, John, is they gave up 35 points in that win over the Giants, yep, on the opening Sunday, the 45-35 game.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to get up 37 combined in the last three games.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, having healthy Terrence Newman certainly helps. Now, you know, Anthony Henry got a little banged up last week. Remains to see what he's doing as far as availability as we can tell. But they got Greg Ellis back last week. They come at you a lot of different ways. You remember, they went through a huge coaching change with Wade Phillips coming in there and bringing his, just because you play the 3-4, you play a different style of 3-4. And I think you have progressively seen the Cowboys. In fact, the number shows it. They gave up 35 points, then they gave up 20, then they gave up 10, then they gave up 7. So, you know, they seemingly have gotten better every week. Like the New York Giants, who are a new defensive coordinator, and I'm sure we'll talk about them a little later, who have made a dramatic turnaround, mm-hmm, since giving up 45 points in that opening Sunday night game.
Right, right. All right, so the Cowboys play at Buffalo, and then a couple of other games with the divisional opponents here first. Miami playing at Houston. Houston got off to that 2-0 start, struggled the last couple of weeks, although I guess you'd have to say at least in one of those games they were certainly in it. And Miami's got to go on the road and try to get out of an over. And you know, I don't know if you can say that this is the spot that they're going to do that.
Well, I think the thing is probably surprising some people right now is they've gotten a couple of really good back-to-back games from Ronnie Brown. Not that that's an enormous surprise. I think that the surprise is in the fact that their defense has been a little bit of a disappointment. I know Zach Thomas did not play last week, but they've given up 31 or more points 3 weeks in a row. They gave up close to 300 yards rushing to the Oakland Raiders last week. They are giving up, you know, they've given up 140 yards on the ground 3 weeks in a row. It's enabling team to play action pass. And again, Ronnie Brown has touched the ball 50 times the last 2 weeks, John, has four touchdowns and 418 yards from scrimmage. So he's bounced back after a slow start. But we talked about the Texans last week in terms of a maturity game, and they didn't necessarily pass the maturity test. They got ambushed at Atlanta. Good performance by Joey Harrington. And those are the games that you're supposed to win, that you got to make sure you win them. Now, they're coming home and playing a Miami team that's winless. Last year, they beat the Dolphins. In fact, they beat the Dolphins a couple of years ago and snapped Miami's 11-game opening day winning streak in Miami, as a matter of fact. They're expected to win this game, and if Houston's going anywhere at all, they need to win this game.
And then, of course, you mentioned the Giants. They get to be at home, so to speak, against the Jets, who have to go to the visitors' locker room, I guess, this weekend. Although, do they do that? I mean, does each team have their own locker rooms that they get to stay in at Giants Stadium? Do you know?
I'm not 100% sure, but, you know, I'm sure they have to. You know, it's really the Giants facility. I don't know how exactly it works. I always have one interesting factoid when these two teams play each other.
Okay.
And this will be the 11th time they've played in a regular season. They always play in the preseason.
Right.
And the Jets did beat them in the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
But this will be the 11th time, so 10 previous games. How many of those games, John, do you think have been played in New York?
Ooh, really? All of them?
None of them. I'm sorry, one of them.
One of them?
Just one.
Really?
Just one.
Where were the other ones? Where were? Oh, geez, of course, New Jersey.
Right. but there's also a new also in there as well. They played in Shea in 1970.
Oh, no kidding.
When the Giants beat them.
Yeah.
They've played the majority of games, obviously, at the Meadowlands in East Rutherford, New Jersey. But they also played in 1974 at New Haven, Connecticut.
No kidding.
In the Yale Bowl when the Giants were waiting to get their stadium built.
Right.
And it's part of a great trivia question because it was the first overtime game, regular season, that was actually decided in overtime.
Really?
Yes, 1974, the NFL brought overtime to the regular season, and week two, Pittsburgh and Denver went in overtime, and guess what? They ended up tied.
Wow.
Weeks later, the Jets and the Giants played at Yale New Haven, and the Jets pulled it out 26-20 in overtime, which also featured a touchdown run, not the game-winning run, by Joe Namath.
Woo-hoo.
A
good.
Run.
Good stuff.
Yeah, a run. So,
no kidding.
I wouldn't even be surprised if my friend the Swami brought that up this week.
You're going to feed it to him, right?
You never know. It's one of our, me and him share a love of history, and you never know what you're going to see there. So.
Well, see, now you're giving Patriots fans something to look for. You know, hey, let's listen to see if Berman comes up with that factoid about Namath.
What?
There you go.
The thing is, that remember, it's the two-minute drill, and it takes Joe probably about 2.5 minutes to run around end from the two-yard line, I think it is. So.
That's about right. That's about right. Good stuff. Russell Baxter, of course, with us from ESPN. Let's take a look quickly then at a couple of other games. We touched on the ones that Pats fans will be most interested in. There's some intriguing matchups in the AFC. You've got Seattle and Pittsburgh, you know, an interconference matchup thing going on. But, I mean, which Pittsburgh team are we going to see? Are we going to see the team that looked fairly impressive winning against three, you know, questionable opponents, or a team that kind of stubbed its toe and lost its way last week?
Well, it goes to show you what coaching means in the National Football League. And we alluded to it before with the Giants. Steve Spagnuolo, who was with the Eagles last year, and then he's the Giants' defensive coordinator on Sunday night. And I'm not saying anybody thought they'd get 12 sacks, but familiarity breeds winning. And remember, Pittsburgh went down to Arizona last week, faced a couple of its former offensive coaches,
right,
Ken Whisenhunt and Russ Grimm.
Right.
And if you watch the flow of that game, Pittsburgh never got their running game going. I thought it showed me how much they were on tune with the offenses when Adrian Wilson stepped into that that passing lane and picked off that pass in the end zone to the tight end.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great read by Adrian Wilson, who's a very underrated defensive player, but it also just shows you the familiarity. Coaches move so much in this league. Now they move, you know, coordinators move more than head coaches, and I think that was very evident. That being said, Pittsburgh needs to be careful here. Don't think the Seahawks have forgotten the, what you want to call it, a controversial win in Super Bowl 40.
Mm-hmm.
The first time these teams have played.
Sure.
You know, a lot of people think it was, you know, Pittsburgh 21, Seattle 10, referees 22. So if you remember the flow of that game. But we'll see. I mean, Seattle is, you know, it's usual itself. You know, their defense, very aggressive. Julian Peterson coming off a big game. Ben Roethlisberger did not look nearly as escapable as he did the week before against San Francisco. And if Seattle brings the heat and Pittsburgh can't run, not going to be surprised at all if Pittsburgh quickly goes from 3-0 to 3-2.
Tampa Bay is also playing in Indianapolis on Sunday afternoon, and I bring that up only because the Tampa Bay is up to 3-0. Of course, the Colts are playing at home. 3-1. Colts are playing at home here, but I'm wondering about the Tampa defense and whether or not it's as good as apparently it's advertised.
Well, I think the Tampa offense has been the key to their defensive revival. They have found ways to hang on to the football. You know, Jeff Garcia has yet to throw an interception, even though he's thrown only two touchdown passes. They've run the ball with a variety of guys. They've done a great job controlling the football. I think a lot of people, including myself, were a little skeptical of Garcia going down there and succeeding because Tampa Bay has been so up and down in recent years. Remember, in 2005, they won the division. Last year, they were 4-12. So you never really got a sense of what they were doing. But the bad news, unfortunately, for Tampa Bay is not only playing the Colts, but there's a rumor going around that the Colts and Peyton Manning want to transfer into the NFC. Let me throw out a number for you, which includes the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Okay? Peyton Manning, in his last 22 games, that's going back to 2002 and when Tony Dungy became the head coach, 17-5 versus the NFC.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
These are the numbers that'll blow your mind. 5,698 passing yards in 22 games.
Ooh.
58 touchdowns and 15 interceptions.
Wow, those are
and
pretty.
Anybody who will remember one of the great Monday night games of all time 4 years ago, when Tampa had a 21-point lead with 4.5 minutes left, squandered it at home. At that time, they were the defending Super Bowl champions. Indianapolis came back, won that game 38-35 on Monday night in Tampa. Mm-hmm. It was Tony Dungy's return to Tampa. One of the more exhilarating Monday night games of all time.
Right.
And the Colts are just going about their business. They're getting ready, if they win here, to be 5-0 for the third straight year and the fourth time in 5 years if they can beat the Bucs.
Yep. Absolutely. It certainly gives them some credibility, and you have to give them credit for being able to have that kind of early season consistency. Do you think that, I realize it's been a number of years since he left, but Tony Dungy and the way he left Tampa before he came to the Colts. Do you ever think there's anything to that? That's a guy that probably holds a grudge as anybody holds a grudge. But, I mean, you always – and I mentioned this earlier in the program today. You always like to make sure that people who had you before and no longer have you like to make sure they know what they lost.
Well, I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, one thing that strikes me about Coach Dungy, he's a very proud man.
Yes.
As far as the revenge card, I don't know so much about that. I don't know how you can get – better quote-unquote revenge, if we're going to use that, as to go into the defending Super Bowl champions' park, okay, and just go and beat them in record-breaking fashion, which is, like I said, giving up a 21-point lead with four. I mean, we talk about great rallies in the fourth quarter. Tampa Bay was up 35-14 with 4.5 minutes left and couldn't hold the lead.
Jeez.
So I don't know if you can get a more satisfying win than that.
No, that's true. There are two games, Russell, on Sunday as well that bring into play two really disappointing teams to this point in time, surprise teams, actually three of the four. One of them is San Diego playing at Denver, and the fact that the Chargers are 1-3, Patriots handle them fairly easily as well, which was a surprise, I think, to everyone. Is San Diego as bad as 1-3 would indicate they are?
Well, I don't know if they're bad. I think they're disheveled, and I don't think there's any question about it. I think you combine the fact that you have a natural letdown after you lose the way they lose, and I'm not saying anything we haven't said the last couple of weeks, to have that long winning streak, to have home field advantage, to have the best record in the league at 14-2, and then all of a sudden let it just get away and lose at home to a very good New England team, but still it looks like you have everything set for you. Some people can handle that. Some people can handle that mental disappointment and so on. We're going to find out about the Patriots this year.
Sure.
People forget they blew an 18-point lead in the AFC Championship game. It's the biggest lead ever in a championship game to let get away. And we'll see how they respond come playoff time. You know, I'm going to go out on a limb and think they might make the playoffs considering the way they're playing right now. It's how you respond. You find out how good you are when you lose, not when you win.
Right.
That's I'm always a great big believer in that.
Absolutely,
and,
true.
You know,
absolutely
and, true. And I certainly didn't invent that, but I'm a big believer in that. But you know, remember the Chargers in 2004 were a team that were on the rise. They finished 12-4. They got upset by the Jets in the first round of the playoffs at home, and they came back that following year and finished 9-7. I'll never forget that, including only 4-4 at home. They got off to an 0-2 start, made a mid-season run, but just couldn't sustain it. And it showed me that that team just didn't handle it well. And, you know, there's a lot of those same components still on this team. And, you know, I think you also combine the front office decisions. It seems like the head coach is not really the head coach there, to be honest with you. I just think there's a lot going on there. And let me throw out one other thing, because we're always talking about LaDainian Tomlinson and North Turner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, late last year, I think people got the book on Phillip Rivers. And that's nothing to be ashamed of there, because everybody gets the book on everybody. But he's been a pretty average quarterback since the beginning. It's been middle of the year last year. Last year, he threw 13 touchdown passes and 3 picks in his first 9 games. Since then, including the playoff loss to the Patriots, 14 touchdowns, 13 picks.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, and those are pretty pedestrian numbers for a guy who wound up in the Pro Bowl last year, and I think everybody's just kind of, it happens to everybody. It happened to Tony Romo last year once people got the book on him, and he's come out and made his adjustments this year, and they look like a different team. They look like a different offense. I don't know how much adjustment has been going on with Phillip Rivers, but they are also going into a place where, you know, they have struggled mightily.
Right.
Even though they won there last year, they're 4-20 in their last 24 trips to Denver. They did win there last year. And the Broncos are having their own problems right now. They can't stop the run, giving up 180 or more yards 3 weeks in a row. These are two teams that we figured were going to vie for the AFC West title. Don't laugh, and I'm being serious, don't laugh. The team in the AFC West who might be playing the best football right now
Oakland Raiders.
Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, I agree with that. Right now, absolutely.
Look like they have gone under a dramatic attitude change and change in philosophy.
Sure. The Sunday night game has two teams that are surprising for their directions that they're currently headed. Chicago 1-3, Green Bay 4-0, one of the four unbeatens in the NFL right now. Is this must win for Chicago at Green Bay?
Well, you can't keep on digging yourself a hole. And, you know, the must wins are, you know, you throw out that term and it's always, you're always not sure. But I'd call it a pretty much a must win.
Yeah, I would think so.
You've got to, you know, so much got thrown on Rex Grossman, and rightfully so, and so on. But they changed the quarterback last week, and he served up 3 picks as well. They've got some holes on defense. They've got some holes on their offensive line. They've given up 15 sacks in 4 games. They only gave up 25 all last year. The thing that's, you know, we talk about the Packers and Brett Favre and so on, is they have been, they are dispelling all the notions that you have to run the football in this league. And I think, let me stand by this and say, later in the year, they need to rediscover or discover a running game. Because doing what they're doing so far, the fact that they are 4-0 and have run, John, for a cumulative total of 217 yards in those 4 games.
Wow.
217. I mean, the Raiders last week, I think, had 299 in beating Miami. How does that compare? There are 27 running backs in the NFL right now that have more than 217 yards rushing. Okay?
Yeah.
That's listen, we're early on, and those are the numbers you can have fun with. But, you know, they have got to get some sort of consistency here. Now, Brett Favre has always done well against the Bears. But I will say this. The last 4 times he's played them, 1-3, 1 touchdown, 9 interceptions. The fact that the Packers don't run and the Bears aren't going to be interested in playing the run, their speed on defense and depending on their healthy bodies, this could be a trickier matchup for the Packers, even though it's in Lambeau Field. And for whatever weird reason, for the last couple of years, numerous years, almost 10 years, the road team always seems to do quite well here. The Bears have had their success at Lambeau Field going back to 98.
Adds to the intrigue for watching, certainly, on Sunday night. And that brings us full circle back to the Pats and Cleveland Browns. You know, for the second time now in a couple of weeks, the Patriots are a prohibitive favorite. I don't think I certainly don't ever remember the Patriots being back-to-back 17-point favorites, or actually 2 out of the last 3 weeks.
Lexington, wasn't it the last time the Patriots were fair? Were they an underdog?
I think they were an underdog.
Lexington. I can't remember. Where were they in Valley Forge? They were definitely an underdog.
They're definitely an underdog.
Well, actually, that game was off the board because of weather.
Cold and rainy? A little snowy, too?
Snow, a lot of snow.
A lot of snow in the forecast? A
lot of snow.
No kidding. The General Washington, he was able to put it right through there. I know.
Yeah.
You know, I have a feeling that, I think the Patriots are certainly going to respect what Romeo Crennel brings, with his team here. And the fact remains that Cleveland has gotten out a pretty good start at 2-2. Somewhat surprising with a win last week, especially in the fashion in which they beat Baltimore by 2 touchdowns. But is this team, in your estimation, at any stretch, a threat to New England on Sunday?
Well, I think there's a degree of threat. I don't think there's any question about it. They have played better. It's not only they play better offensively, they have played better. Let's put it this way. They're playing better than Cincinnati is right now. And Cincinnati, I know, didn't fare very well, but they seem to have a little more confidence. They definitely have offensive confidence. I'm sure they're kicking themselves about the way that game ended in Oakland. Now they could be sitting at 3-1. Think about how far the Browns have come after the opening day loss to Pittsburgh in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
They came out and scored 51 points on the Bengals. They moved the ball very, very well. The thing about them that I like is they also set themselves up with good field position. Joshua Cribbs, very, very underrated and maybe a potential Pro Bowl kick returner this year. The last few weeks, really been a coming out party, even more so for Braylon Edwards. Here's some numbers for you. The last three games, Braylon Edwards, 15 catches, 326 yards. That's about 22 yards a pop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and 4 touchdowns in his last three games. I mean, Derek Anderson has 9 touchdown passes this year, John, in 4 games. He and Charlie Fry only combined to throw 15 all of last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, on the other end of the spectrum are the Patriots. The first team since the 1920 Buffalo
All-Americans. Yes.
Okay, which I think this first year you and I did the show.
feels like it sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah, and to win their games by 20 or more points all right. Each 4 of their games.
Mm-hmm.
And here comes a stat, and I don't even know, with all due respect, if the Patriots themselves even know this. Okay, something I worked on over the summer, and it's already come to fruition. So there's a lot to be said for preparation. And anybody else needs any help? 1-900-RUSSELL-BAXTER, and I will.
Really?
Randy Moss has caught 7 touchdown passes this year.
Yep.
Okay, in 4 games.
Right.
Do you know he has already tied the most touchdown passes ever caught from Tom Brady in a season?
Really?
Yes.
So Tom had never thrown more than 7 to a single receiver.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Let me tell you the beauty of what Tom Brady does.
Mm-hmm.
You go back, and already he's thrown touchdown passes this year to 5 different players.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
In his previous 6 years as a starter, I went back and looked at all this, okay? Minimum, 9 different players catch touchdown passes from Tom Brady in a season.
Mm-hmm.
9 in 2001, 11 in 2002, 9 in 2003 and 2004, 12 in 2005, 11 in 2006. But the most ever in one season, and that's why Tom Brady doesn't get a receiver that really goes to the Pro Bowl, because they don't put up these electrifying numbers.
Numbers, right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Here's one for you. There's 2 other guys, 1 in 2002, 1 in 2004, who also caught 7 touchdown passes from Tom Brady in a season. They're both no longer with the team.
Right.
They're both still in the league. Any guesses?
One's got to be Deion, right? Branch?
No, it's not Deion. It is not Deion Branch.
No?
No.
Okay, how about...
let me know on time, and I'll start
about,
whipping them out.
Okay, all right, so you're talking about...
one is a tight end, and one is a wide receiver.
The tight end's Christian Fourier.
That is correct. In 2002, he caught 7.
The wide receiver, if it's not Deion Branch...
Well, you got the right first initial.
Oh, David Givens.
David Patton.
David Patton?
Yes, David Givens caught 6 in 2003.
Oh,
but,
okay.
Whatever. The idea wasn't to stump you. The idea is to...
That's okay.
The idea is
I get stumped all the time.
That, to me, is just incredible. And it's just a tribute to Brady about his ability to throw the ball. He comes up with these numbers as far as touchdown passes, but who do you really focus on? It just shows you how great he is. Great he is at finding the open receiver.
Right.
But now he's doing something different here. And every one of these Patriots great teams have something different. Right now, again, Randy Moss, 7 touchdown passes in 4 games. The sky's the limit on how many he could catch this year.
No kidding. Yeah, well, I would tend to believe that, you know, and we've had several people ask us, do you think that maybe Moss would have an opportunity to challenge Jerry Rice's single-season record? And my initial inclination is to say no because of Brady's, as you've already talked about, Russell, Brady's penchant for liking to spread it around and trying different receivers. But obviously, you can never say never until you get a little bit further in the season. You find out and you look, oh, my gosh, he's already caught 16 or 17, and you've got, you know, 6 weeks left to go. I mean, I guess it's conceivable. I just think because of, you know, the Patriots' offense, by nature, spreading it around, I think it still is somewhat unlikely.
Well, as everybody knows, or maybe don't know, the record for the season is Jerry Rice, who caught 22 in 1987, which is, that's a pretty daunting number. Obviously, Randy would have to continue the pace he is currently on to do it, if he's, and so on. But I will tell you this, that's even more incredible. Jerry Rice did that total in 12 games because he did not play during the strike, to my knowledge, in 1987. Remember, they did the three replacement games.
Right.
So he caught 22 touchdown passes in a dozen games.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible.
That year, which that doesn't – listen, if Randy catches 23 and 16, that's the NFL record. I'm not saying that. Just shows you how phenomenal Jerry Rice was.
Oh, no doubt.
In what was his third year in the league.
No doubt. All right, Russell, again, not to put one on you here, but Mr. Grodecki was scratching his head over, you know, the Patriot facts that you just gave us here. Daniel Graham caught 7 touchdowns in 2004.
In 2004?
Yeah, 7 touchdowns.
Well, I'm going to have to check that out because something doesn't sound right.
Along
with them all from Tom Brady?
Maybe that was what it was then. It's conceivable. You know, it doesn't say here. It just says 7 touchdown catches.
Right. See, no, this is just from Tom Brady. It's not the most in the season.
Okay.
It's just from Tom Brady. And I will go back and check that. I will double-check that, okay? Because something doesn't – I will double-check that.
Well, let me – okay,
since
that's
on
fine.
The record here, I have to
think
that out.
No, that's right. That's fine. Well, I'm looking at it here in terms of – I mean, Rohan Davey was 4 of 10 throwing the football. And the only other quarterback to throw a touchdown was Adam Vinatieri.
Who threw to under Troy Brown that year. Oh, well, I'll double-check. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Okay. God, that would break my heart. but he did catch 7, you said, right?
It says here he caught 7.
Okay, I'm going
to
check that
out. And the only other person to throw a TD pass that year besides Brady was Vinatieri.
Well, I will definitely check that out before I send that out.
Okay. Russell, we just wanted to get you once in 3 years. Don't worry about
it. That would break my heart.
I know. Well,
you did say 7, right?
7, yeah, right
okay.
here.
I'm
going
to check that out.
I'm looking at the book right at it. And that year, amongst all the Patriots scored 49 touchdowns, 15 rushing, 29 by the pass.
I'm checking it right now.
And there's Daniel Graham at the
top
of the list.
Now I
got to
get off the phone so I can go check this.
Okay, all right, you go get off the phone. Russell, hey, thanks a lot anyway. I appreciate it as always. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
All right, guys, have a good weekend.
Yep, you too. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Didn't mean to do that to him.
No, I didn't because I heard it was Deion Branch.
Well, I kind of thought it was Branch anyway, to be honest with you. I'm just thinking off the top of my head without looking at the book. And then, you know, if he said, no, it starts with a D. On the Givens was the first one I thought of. It wasn't David Patton. Starting with a D is still correct, but it was Daniel Graham. It was Daniel Graham that caught 7 passes, 7 touchdowns.
Well, Patton did it too.
Did he? Which season?
Not that year.
No, he did it in, I'd have to look back at the other stats here. Patton did it in 2002 or 1. Well, he caught 5 in 2002, and Patton did it in, he scored 5 in 2001, and I don't think Patton did it. Caught 5 in 02? No, he didn't do it, Gary. Patton did, I don't think Patton did it. Oh, yes, he did. He also did it in 2004. He and Graham both caught 7 in 2004. So that's what Russell was looking at. So now Russell's got to go, you know, he's getting ready to send out this. By the way, he sends out his email missives on these things to probably about 1,000 people. And I'm talking about people all throughout ESPN and their NFL coverage and people who cover the NFL. And so when you see facts and figures from the NFL, from beat reporters and the like, there's at least a fair chance that that reporter got his information from Russell Baxter. So that's why he's like, oh, I got to go.
Baxter.
I got to go. You know, I got to check this out because he's getting ready to send out this huge email missive that he does every Thursday. I get it on my email at home with all these facts and figures in there. And so now he's got to go check this out before he sends it out. So interesting. Way to go, Gary. You stumped. I'll give you full credit for stumping Russell Baxter.
I'll have to defer to Patriots PR and the media guy.
Okay, right. Okay, you'll defer to that. That's true. All right, we want to go to Romeo? Okay, very good. Romeo Crennel, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, of course, beloved, I think, is maybe a little bit too much of a term beater, but there are a lot of people that like Romeo a lot for the time he spent as a defensive line coach and as a defensive coordinator here in New England. And now he's still trying to he's slowly improving things as head coach of the Cleveland Browns, and he had a chance to visit earlier with members of the Patriots media.
Hello.
Hey, Romeo. Jim Donaldson from Providence. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. You?
Oh, doing very well, thank you. Watching some pretty good football these days, which is one of the things I wanted to ask you. You certainly saw these guys win 3 Super Bowl rings, obviously an integral part of that. When you look at this team on film, how does it compare with those 3 Super Bowl champions?
Well, I think it compares very favorably. They've got good players at every position all the way across the board, and they all seem to be producing as well. And so, I mean, they look really good.
From a defensive standpoint, and obviously we're not going to get into specifics here, in general, what does Randy Moss and the general upgrading of receivers do to this club offensively and problems pose for a defensive genius such as yourself?
Well, Randy has always, posed a problem when he's been in the right situation, and it looks like he's in the right situation. And he's just making unbelievable plays. As I've looked at these first 4 games, you can make a Randy Moss highlight reel out of what he's able to do. And I think that helps Tom. Now, with that being said, if you didn't have Randy Moss on the team, you would still have a very good football team, and I would venture to say they'd be ranked at the top of the league still offensively because they're that good.
Two of the things you mentioned, the highlight film and the catch that he made, and the catch and throw, it was a great throw by Tommy against the Bills on that long sideline route where the corner, I'd say, pretty much has him covered. And obviously the catch he makes in the end zone where he goes up and over the cornerback against Cincinnati on Monday night and then tiptoes both feet and bounds, it's like you can have him covered and it doesn't matter.
Well, right, that's true. Defensive backs have had good position on him, but he's able to go up and get the ball and make the play. And even sometimes when they think that they are running in stride with him, he just keeps running and extends and makes the play. He's one of those guys that's hard to cover.
Have you confronted, you've seen an awful lot of good teams. Certainly the Rams, that first Super Bowl team, and we could run through a long list. It seems to me right now, particularly with Brady running the show, this team has as many weapons, maybe even like the 49ers that I covered in Super Bowls when Walsh and Seifert had it going. They seem to have as many weapons as any team I've seen, and I would ask you the same question. Right now, have you ever seen a team that can attack you more ways right now?
Well, not really. As I watch them, the thing that comes to mind is Indianapolis and Peyton Manning and how he runs that offense. And it's very comparable because they're hard to stop, and the Patriots are hard to stop right now.
Romeo, how important is pressure on the quarterback? One thing Tom just talked about a couple minutes ago was he's concerned that you guys will bring as much pressure as you possibly can to disrupt their offense. How important is that?
Well, anytime you can get pressure on a quarterback, that generally disrupts him a little bit, because he's worried about getting hit. He has to move off the spot, destroys his timing a little bit. So, as much as we can, we'd like to be able to do that. Now, along with that comes the downside also, because sometimes to bring pressure, you have to man up, and so you have to pick and choose your time.
What do you tell your defensive backs this week regarding Moss and his ability to make plays even when there's tight coverage? That could be mentally challenging for a defensive back to know that even if he does everything right, he still could get burned.
Well, sure. You tell him that he's got to be perfect on his technique, and when he thinks he's in good position, you're not in good position. You have to get in better position. And if they will approach it like that, they might have a chance.
What is your take on what do you think Rodney Harrison potentially returning to the lineup this week is going to do for the Patriots? Bill was non-committal today as to whether he would be active, but Rodney says he wants to play. What is his? You know him as well as anyone. What does he bring to the table?
Well, one, I know that he wants to play, and if Bill will let him play, that he'll be ready. You know, he brings that veteran leadership, that physical presence, a winning attitude. All of those things are positive, and that's what you want on your football team.
Were you surprised by the suspension?
Yes, to a degree. You know, I don't know all the particulars about it, but I didn't expect it in that situation.
Romeo, you waited a long time to get a chance to be a head coach. You know, I say this facetiously, but it's not one of those deals where you look back and say, "Be careful what you wish for," is it?
No, you know, this job, you never know until you sit in this seat. There's always something comes up that you don't expect, no matter how good you plan and try to get ready for. But when you see progress, when you see your team make progress, when you see your team listen to you and try to do what you tell them to do and play as a team, you know, then you feel good as a head coach. And I think that some of that is beginning to happen here. You know, the first 2 years, we were trying to make progress, and we did make progress, but it wasn't showing up on the football field. Now I think that some of the progress that we've made, you know, in the previous years is beginning to show up on the field this year to this point. You know, now it's still early in the season.
I was a little bit surprised, honestly, when you let Charlie Fry go as soon as you did. And maybe it's my Notre Dame tendency. I sat and wondered, I said, gee, is he going to go to the kid this early on? Clearly, you saw something in Anderson that, you know, the nationwide people maybe weren't aware of. He's played awfully well.
Oh, yes, he has. He's done a good job for us. And, you know, last year, he came in the game last year and won a Kansas City game for us, and he showed that he could run the offense and move the team. And like I said, he did win that game for us and showed he had ability. So we knew he had the ability. He's got a strong arm, and he's beginning to show that maybe he deserves the spot that he has.
Why did you let Fry go as quickly as you did?
Well, there was some interest in Fry, and there was some trade value. And ever since we drafted Quinn, I think people around the league knew that probably somebody would go eventually. They just didn't know when it was going to be, and there have been inquiries all along, and because Fry was the third-round draft choice, and people liked Fry when he came out, liked his competitiveness, liked his ability to move around, there was interest in him, and so decided to go ahead and make that move and to get something for him at that time, and it worked out.
How is Quinn progressing? I mean, you know, we two of us have been around long enough. The guy that doesn't play is always the one that the fans love the most. He's, you know, he's an Ohio kid. He's got the Notre Dame glamour. You know, I think it's tough on Anderson and a little bit tough on you to pick the right time. And clearly the way your guy's playing right now, that time could be a ways down the road.
Oh, yeah. And that's not a bad thing, you know. If Anderson keeps playing good and we're able to win ball games, I think that this just helps Brady's development, you know, because he can sit and he can watch, study teams, and then when he does get in there, I think he'll be more ready. You know, sometimes we try to force young kids in before they're ready in today's game, and I think it can benefit him not to be forced in.
Well, you know,
he did
Romeo,
the time in camp.
If he had better preparation in college, he'd probably be more prepared for the NFL, too.
Don't tell Charlie that, all right?
Charlie's getting enough grief right now. What has been the best part of this job for you?
Well, the best part has been winning games, and you know, that's why we're in it. And so when you win, you feel good. And then, like I mentioned earlier, to see your team grow, mature, and start understanding what you're telling them, and the importance of, you know, playing as a team and not being selfish and things like that.
What does coming back to Foxborough mean to you, Romeo?
Well, I tell you what, you know, I've been back to Foxborough, because I was there on my first stint and then went to the Jets and came back, you know, as a visiting coach. And so now, you know, this is the second time I'll be coming back as a visiting coach. Now, the facilities will be a lot better, and I'm looking forward to that. So we're excited about coming and trying to play against one of the better teams in the NFL.
What about matching wits with Bill?
Well, Bill doesn't play and I don't play. You know, the players.
You win that one, by the way.
Well, hey, if it was a physical matchup, I would probably win. If we had a raise, now he might win.
And, of course, Romeo Crennel, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, formerly defensive coordinator and defensive line coach for the New England Patriots, as he met members of the Patriots media. Hello.
Hey, I'm great. You?
Nice to hear from you, Coach. All right, let's also give you a chance then to listen into Pat's media and their discussions with Browns running back Jamal Lewis. Now, is he washed up? Does he still have a little life left in the legs? I mean, at least from all appearances through the first four games left in this year, after this year. You don't necessarily need to call the ambulance for him because...
But that was the police.
Oh, that was the police? Oh, I see. Okay. So we're going to go back to that, huh? I'm sure that's probably something he'd rather forget about in his life. But nevertheless, football-wise, Jamal Lewis seems to have gotten off to a good start in Cleveland after having his run end in Baltimore and somewhat successfully. But... let's see if he's rejuvenated enough to face this Patriots defense. Here is Cleveland running back Jamal Lewis.
Hello.
Hi, Jamal. How you doing?
I'm good.
Obviously, this Patriots team quite a challenge what they put together the first 4 weeks. What are your thoughts heading into this game and trying to match up with this defense?
Well, really, I haven't really watched a lot of tape just yet on their defense or whatever. But you know that they play sound defense. You know, they play solid defense and you just have to respect them and just have to go out and try to execute, you know, the plays that we put in.
This week, obviously, they get Rodney Harrison back. He's a guy you're familiar with going against in the past. What does he add to a defense? What kind of challenges does he present?
Well, you know, he is a factor, and you have to find out where he is on the field because he is a tough and, very physical player. And I think we just have to account for him. Like I said, just find out where he's at on the field.
How about yourself, Jamal? It seems you're a little rejuvenated with the move to Cleveland this year. How have you felt about your own performance this year?
I feel pretty good. You know, we had a tough four games to start out with. But, I feel pretty good about everything. The offensive line blocking well, and we're still growing as an offense. You know, we do have a new offensive coordinator, and everybody's picking things up well. And I think
what are your thoughts on Romeo, your first year playing under him? What kind of coach has he been for you?
Oh, he's a great, he's a great players coach. He takes care of us and everything, and we just want to go out and win for him. And I think he knows what he's doing, and just took a little time, and I think we're going to get it done for him.
And Patriots coming off a short week with a Monday night, does that give you any kind of an edge that you think you're a little more rested, a little more time to prepare for them than they have?
Not necessarily. You know, it's just a day. You know, I think it's just a day, and I think they're a good veteran team, and they can, I think they'll handle that well. So we can't just think we can use that as an advantage or whatever. We still have to go out and execute and just do what we have to do, prepare to get ready for this game.
What have you seen out of Anderson there at quarterback? How has he developed in the last 3 weeks here for you?
He's got a lot better, all the way through training camp and through OTAs, mini camps. He's been doing great, and he's just been getting better as time goes on. And I think since he's taken over the starting role, it just gives him more reps and just really gets him more into it. So I'm very impressed with him, and I think he's only going to get better as time passes.
Has Anderson and the receivers kind of opened things up for you a little bit?
Oh yeah, most definitely. And I think that's a great thing that we are connecting with the receivers and are getting the ball downfield and passing the ball downfield because I think that takes a lot of pressure off myself and kind of we'll open up the box with teams that, want to put 8-9 men in the box sometimes. That kind of open them up and make defense play more honest.
How much, in terms of leadership in the locker room stuff, how much does it help to have Willie McGinnis back for you guys?
It's great. He has a great motor. He sets the tempo in practice and gets everybody going. He's a veteran. He's been for a while, and he knows what it takes to get it done.
Jamal, what was your feeling on the Browns when you were playing against them? They seemed like since they came back into the NFL that they were a franchise that just couldn't do anything right.
Well, I think it takes time. I think Phil Savage, he's doing a great job putting his team together and everything, and it takes time, and that's really what it is.
the guy to come in when he's putting the right pieces to the puzzle, you know, together.
Hey, Jamal, I appreciate the time.
Hey, no problem. Hello?
Hey, Jamal, how you doing?
I'm good, I'm good.
Obviously, this Patriots team by quite a challenge what they put together the first 4 weeks. What are your thoughts heading into this game and trying to match up with this defense?
All right, that's Jamal Lewis, of course, as he met with members of the Patriots media. No sense in trying to send you through it a second time, but it was a little short. And, didn't sound like he was curt or anything. It just sounded like he was, you know, he does not exactly one of those kind of guys that likes to expand upon comments from time to time. So, but I think you were able to get the gist of what he was talking about and where he's coming from. And that was a little bit of insight into how he's approaching the game coming up this week. Let's face it, it's going to be a tough task overall for the Browns going in. Otherwise, you wouldn't see a 16.5 or a 17-point spread going into this game like it was 2 weeks ago when the Patriots were getting ready to play the Buffalo Bills here. Fact is, though, as we said then, and we'll say again now, and we'll say in any subsequent weeks hereafter, if the Patriots don't come out and play their game, their style of football, if they don't dictate to Cleveland how this game needs to be played, they could still be in trouble. Cleveland's offense appears to be capable. They're 11th overall in total offense. I mentioned that early in the program. They did put 51 up on the board against an admittedly, shall we say, dismal Cincinnati defense earlier this season in that 51-45 win they had. But you still have to have some talent, and you still have to have something going for you if you put up 51 points in a pro football game. Not too many teams do it. Otherwise, you'd see it more often. So they're going to be capable. I think the one thing that the Patriots need to make sure they guard themselves from is the simple thing is to, you know, take care of the football. Not let Cleveland stick around in the game. You want to jump on them quickly if you can. You want to get out to a lead, and you don't want them to hang around. In fact, Steve King from ClevelandBrowns.com mentioned that on yesterday's program. He said, you know, the Browns' biggest hope here and best chance for success going to a place like New England is to keep the game close and then have a chance to steal it at the end. You hear that a lot, but it's true here when you have, you know, an admitted, you know, paper mismatch. Romeo Crennel just said in his conference call, you know, hey, in the Super Bowl against the Rams in 2001, the Rams were prohibitive favorites in that one too. Nobody gave the Patriots any kind of a chance. And we all know what happened because you got to play the game. So you got to stick around and then have a chance to steal it and hope that, you know, you can either force a player into a mistake or force a team into a mistake, and then you have to take advantage of that mistake made. Patriots have to avoid mistakes. If they do that, they win this game 35-38-14. Like they have done pretty much the other games on their schedule thus far. All right, we're going to wrap it up today and give you an opportunity to listen to members of the Patriots locker room from earlier this afternoon. Right before the guy stepped out onto the field to practice and get ready for Cleveland, you've got Kevin Faulk, Jarvis Green, the newly re-signed Marcellus Rivers, Larry Izzo, Adalis Thomas, Junior Seau, and Ellis Hobbs, all on our interviews.
Talk about those new T-shirts, too.
What new T-shirts?
Adalis Thomas made T-shirts for everyone. On the front, it said, I eat it, and on the back, it said, humble pie.
Really? Excellent. So that's you'll have to hear that from Adalis Thomas coming up in our locker room conversations. I eat it, humble pie. Like that.
We're going to make one for the PFW guys.
Yeah.
Chicken pot pie.
Or that you're going to say, I eat it, and on the back, everything. That might also be appropriate here. All right, so that's interesting news. You get a little insight, a little scoop here inside Patriots Playbook. So we'll find out what Adalis Thomas has to say about the T-shirts that he has made for the members of his football team and his teammates on the team. So, again, Kevin Faulk, Jarvis Green, tight end Marcellus Rivers, Larry Izzo, Adalis Thomas, Junior Seau, and Ellis Hobbs, all inside the Patriots locker room, same Pat's time, same Pat's channel, after Pat's and the Cleveland Browns next week.
We're just trying to stay humble as a team.
Yeah, did someone come up with it? I know Adalis had a story about humble pie and how
it's... Well, it's Adalis. Adalis just being him, and that's the type of guy he is, just trying to bring a little bit of humor to the locker room and just make sure everything, you know, is on an even keel.
Did you guys just get him today?
Yesterday.
Okay. And what was the reaction?
Guys were excited, you know, just... Couldn't wait to wear them this morning in the meeting room just to see the reaction of the coaches.
Mm-hmm. with a perfect record going into this game, you know, you guys keep telling about talking about how you have to get better. What are some of the improvements on offense you'd like to see?
No penalties, you know, no turnovers, you know, just play consistent, you know, just be able to keep moving the ball.
How dangerous can the Browns be?
They scored 51 points on Cincinnati, so, you know, their defense, they have a lot of different guys that you know, that they can move around. The linebacker that they can put at pretty much any position on the field.
What kind of job do you think Romeo done with them?
Romeo done a wonderful job. You know, they're starting to come around as a whole team now, and they're starting to play together.
How much confidence do you think they have now, 2-2, especially after beating Baltimore? I mean, is this kind of a tough time to play them?
Confidence always rings around when you're winning games. So, you know, you just got to be able just to, you know, do your job. Understand what your job is to attack that team.
Sorry if I missed your first answer to that. Who came up with this idea for you?
Darius Thomas.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, sir.
And as a captain, I mean, is this something that you guys have been sort of preaching anyways this season?
You know, it's something that coach has been, you know, letting us know, hey, look, no matter what anybody says, this team, we have to get better in areas during the course of the week to the team that we're playing.
What does it mean to you? You are now seventh in the team history in receiving, in receptions as a running back. What does that mean to you to reach that mark?
First of all, thank you. No, I didn't know. Thank you. But, you know, it's awesome. You know, it's something that I'll be able to cherish when I'm done playing football. But right now, you know, we're just trying to win games and just continue on moving on forward.
And when you look at other guys on the list, obviously mostly wide receivers or tight ends, does it mean something special based on the position that you are in, your position?
I never even seen the list yet. But, you know, it does. You know, just knowing that you're on, you know, a list and you're a running back with receivers on the same list, it always is special to have that.
Sounds like you've been eating some humble pie.
Always. You know, that's been installed in me since I was a little kid.
Great. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Kevin, a little bit about the new slogan. What is the recipe for humble pie?
I don't know. I mean, I just got the shirt today, so I'm kind of surprised about the shirt.
Mm-hmm. It's a good message, though, for the team, considering how it's going so far. You have to stay humble, right?
Yeah, and I think the recipe, too, just added some ice cream on the side, some vanilla, keeping it simple.
Like that, good.
Jarvis, you guys have had pretty good success defensively on third down this year. How much of that is tied back into what you guys are doing on first and second down? I think you guys are first in the league at allowing the fewest number of yards on first down.
Yes, but we're last in the league in red zone. So, I mean, that's the biggest thing. That's your territory that you got to really protect. I think we're 0-6 right now, so that's not pretty good. I mean, yes, we're doing good with everything else, and I mean, we still have work to improve on.
How is it having Rodney back?
It's cool. I mean, see him in the locker room, smiling. You know, he's the same person, and it's great to have one of the leaders back here.
How about seeing Romeo coming back to town? What did he mean for you?
My first defensive coordinator, and a great guy, great coach, great man. I mean, as far as things he's doing right now, the way they're starting off is pretty good, and it's going to be good to see him again.
I know you don't have to face him, but any thoughts on seeing Willie? Get a chance to see Willie?
Yeah, I see Willie. No, I see Willie, but even not on the field. I mean, I see him around.
But even in a Cleveland uniform, I mean, is he around here for so long? Is it a little bit odd?
No, not for me. I mean, I'm still kind of young. I mean, as far as seeing all that, the difference. I mean, this is part of the league. Guys go different teams. You know, even with the coaches, everybody's always changing. So, I mean, it's not a big deal.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of dry.
Ice cream?
Jarvis Green.
You know, and you're close. You were on that in the bubble, and then you come back here briefly and all that. And all this. Is it personally frustrating to a player not to be settled in a case like that?
I mean, it's going to be frustrating, but I also understand what they had going on in their situation. And, you know, they were up front with me the whole time, letting me know, you know, what the situation was and where they stood with me. And, you know, I appreciated that, and it made me feel good. There was no remorse or no hard feelings at all. I knew if they had an opportunity to get me back that they would.
What do you believe is your greatest strength as a player right now? Or what do you think is the best thing that you offer the Patriots?
I don't know. I'll be honest. I just, whatever it is they ask of me, that's what I'm going to go do, you know, to the best of my ability. Blocking, catching, special teams, whatever.
Were you doing a lot of the special teams in the preseason?
Didn't get an opportunity to do a lot of it in the game. I did some in practice. But, I mean, ultimately, my whole career, that's what I've done. You know, when I wasn't on the field, I was playing special teams. Even when I was on the field, I was playing special teams.
Marcellus, is there any type of role you'd like to play on this team?
Whatever role they want to give me. I don't care what it is. Water boy, whatever. As long as I'm on the team.
In addition to the number 82 uniform, they gave you a new T-shirt today. What do you think about this?
I like my T-shirt, man. I take my humble pie, and I mean, this is what I need, what a lot of guys need. And just I've been on several teams, and, you know, this is one team that we do get a hefty dose of humble pie, and it's well taken. It's good.
Thank you.
All right.
Marcellus Rivers.
Yeah, AD brought him in. You know, obviously something around here that fit. It's kind of fitting. His first year here, I think he's picked up on things, and it's kind of a theme. You know, everybody's got to eat some humble pie at some point, and it seems that we get a lot of that. So I like it.
You guys are going against the league leader in kickoff return yards so far, Fribs. What's it going to take to prevent him from breaking any loose this week?
Yeah, we really got to play our A game against this guy. He's leading the league right now. He's a dangerous returner. He's strong, fast, and he's got a nose for the end zone. So everybody's got to do their job, make plays. Same thing every week. It's just a big challenge going up against a guy that's playing with a lot of confidence.
What kind of job do you think Romeo has been doing with the team?
I'm not in Cleveland, so I mean, I don't really.
Romeo's
a great guy, great coach. I loved playing for him when he was here as our defensive coordinator, and I wish him all the best. I think, you know, he's a good football coach, and that's my evaluation. And I can't really say how he's doing, you know.
There's been a lot of talk about the offense on this team, but how do you like the way the special teams has performed the first 4 weeks of the season?
We just need to continue to improve, you know, like every other part of this team. You know, every guy's got to go out there and try to get better, you know. We're nowhere near where we want to be, and there's definitely room for improvement, you know, more consistent play on a week-in and week-out basis. So that's what we're focused on.
Thank you.
So can you tell us the recipe for humble pie?
It comes in various things, you know. It's just some fun, you know, which was a little change up of being humble. Either you be humble or get humble. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you have to humble yourself every day in life and football and everything else. And so that's just a fun idea to do it.
Is Coach Belichick approved?
You have to ask him about that. I only speak for myself on it, as far as that goes. But, you know, as far as being humble, you know, you always, you know, you have people whenever you think you're doing well or anything like that, you know, you can always overlook something. And so it's just a fun thing that we did, and the guys liked it.
In training camp, you told me that it was something your father has always instilled in you.
Right. You know, you always want to be humble. You know, you don't want to be an egotistical person that walks around and really is always an eye guy. And so, you know, it's like I said, be humble or get humble. And so it's one or the other. And so if you humble yourself every day and, you know, you walk around and be humble, you don't have to have somebody else to humble you. And so sometimes you do need some humble pie. You know, you think you're feeling yourself and you think you're better than what you really are. And so we get a nice dose of humble pie. I mean, you know, on third down, you know, the key thing, the third down is first and second down. You know, you want to get them in third and long and things like that. So you really have to play well on first and second down. You get them in third down, you know, you just go out there and play what the coach called, you know, and I think we prepare very well. Coach gives us a very good, you know, chance to go out there and do the things that we like to do.
You probably know Jamal Lewis as well as anybody in here. I mean, with him for so long, what's it going to take to stop him? And,
First of all, Cleveland offense is very explosive, you know, and Jamal is, you know, a key part of that. He can take the ball at distance from anywhere. He has the speed to run away from DBs, the power to run over linebackers. And so it's going to take a lot of hats, you know, all 11 guys getting to the ball. You want to leave him one-on-one with, you know, somebody because he can easily break a tackle and take it a distance.
How would you describe your comfort level with the Mike linebacker spot?
Where did that question come from? I'm getting more and more comfortable. Again, like I said before, you know, it's just constant repetition. That's not something that you can shortcut or anything like that. And so as you take more reps and play more games, you get more comfortable.
How would you describe your comfort level with this team and this group of guys? You seem to fit right in. Forget the mic, just with the group of players.
It's a great group of guys, you know, all the way around. I've been received well here from the players as well as the fans, as well as the media. But I think it's just, you know, just being who you are, and, you know, it's a great group of guys again. And so it goes to speak a lot of volume for the type of guys that they have here.
Thanks.
You seem like a very respectful person. Did you go to the captains or some of the captains before you had these T-shirts made and just get their stamp of approval on that?
No. I mean, again, it was just something that, you know, that everybody kind of, you know, it's something that is always, I didn't make it up. It's not my thing at all. I didn't make it up or anything like that. I just came up with the idea of printing the shirts. And so with that being, you know, everybody liked it because we kind of talk about it a lot here. But, you know, again, it's just a fun idea of just kind of like a camaraderie thing. You know, everybody is on the same page. Everybody is treated equal. Everybody's the same. And so, you know, we all get a piece of that pie. And as reporters, y'all need it sometime. And as players, we need it sometime. And so we all get our share.
Did you ever do anything similar like this in Baltimore? Did anyone?
We did Deion Sanders T-shirts. We played a joke on him where he had the old, when he had the jersey.
You guys might know what Mike would be doing.
Well, I mean, it's no secret as to what we scouting report going out on us, and it's always going to be something that someone's going to have some kind of knowledge about it. But we're going to go out there and just hopefully execute and get the job done.
Defensively on third down, you guys put up some pretty good numbers this year. I think you guys are first in the league when it comes to holding teams to successfully first. How much of that is tied back into first and second down? That is tied back into what you guys do defensively in first and second.
It all relates to each other. I mean, what we're doing with the third down series is basically when you look at it, it looks good on paper. But, you know, we have to kind of hone down on our red zone. And our red zone is looking horrible right now. And we haven't answered a call there yet. And we look to, you know, obviously improve on that.
What kind of pounds is the Browns offense supposed to be, you guys?
They can put some points on the board. I mean, when you look at their games, you see a lot of great athletes. You know, they got great skill positions. Their quarterback's playing very well. And, you know, when you look at the scoreboard, you know, they're scoring 50 points. You know, and that's something odd when you're in the, you know, you're in the National Football League. So they have a lot of weapons. They really do.
How much respect do you have for William McGinnis, or a guy like yourself, you know, had a long career?
Oh, I love him. I mean, Willie and I both went to USC, you know, and, you know, having the 55 jersey up there at SC, Willie came in and took it over and did a great job with that. Willie's number is still here. You know, I'm renting it. You know, that's all I do. This is his home and always will be. You know, what he's been able to do here is something that I took my hat off to, and he has helped build this culture. And so when Willie comes back home, he should get a round of applause for what he's been able to do. Yeah. He's the one that kept it going, and we passed it on, and so far it's working well. So, you know, I got the number 55. My dad turned 55 years old when I was a freshman. So it's funny how it's been passed down. So it's been very special. So.
Don't worry about that. I eat it too.
Can you show us the bag?
Bumble pie. Nice and warm. I got some this morning.
How'd it taste?
Warm and warm. Oh, it's always nice and hot. So, but trust me, we get our share.
That's the kind of perfect thing. 4 weeks in, 4-0, good timing.
It's always the perfect thing. Anytime, that's the cure for everything. You think you're better than what you are? Get some humble pie. Yeah, you think you're doing well? Go get some humble pie. Bill serve it up real nice.
What type of problems does the Browns offense create for you guys?
I mean, I think it's the same story every week, you know, with different type of players. You know, a very explosive offense. You know, you're dealing with a team that a team we just played previous to these guys, the Cincinnati Bengals, where they were going to war with each other, you know, just a track meet all day. So I don't think we should expect anything less as far as, you know, obviously they're looking to put points on the board. They revamped their offense, you know, offensive coordinator, this and that. And, you know, they got great skill players over there in Winslow, Edwards, you know, Vickers out the backfield, Jamal Lewis, quarterback, you know, Jerry Vicious, all those guys, man, they all can make plays and they all can go deep. We good to go today? All right. Everybody seems to be stuck today.
I ran out of tape, so I'm waiting for my tape.
Oh, okay.
Is it good that a guy like Avila's coming into the team first time would come up with this concept or come up with the shirts like this?
I think, man, he kind of got introduced to it because he couldn't understand, you know, when his first meeting, why Bill was kind of getting on us so hard, you know, where from the outside looking in, you know, you think like we're this, you know, this awesome team. I mean, like the media, fans, they think, man, doesn't nothing go wrong over here. It's just, you know, just happy days every day. It's not like that. So when he got here, he's like, man, I don't understand why is coach always getting on y'all like that. And it's just him being a coach. You know, that's what he's supposed to do. He's being a professional, and he's not supposed to pat us on our back. You know, he's supposed to, you know, cheer us on and congratulate us when something does go well, but that's not his job to sit there and pat us on the back all the time, this and that, because we begin to create this false image of ourselves and get the big heads, and then you look up, we're losing. So his main goal is to always keep us humble. So when AD saw that, it just kind of, you know, I guess it was something new to him. Obviously, they weren't on that program in Baltimore. So it's like, you know, it was just something different to him. So he thought it would be funny. Just another part of us.
You guys when you saw the shirts, did you like it? Did you think it was cool?
Oh, yeah, man. I think anything's cool. Anything kind of throw Bill off that whole little I'm so serious. You know, I want to be the tough guy. And he enjoys it, too. You know, it's all in fun, it's all in laughter. We don't ever take it too far or anything like that. But like I said, I mean, you're seeing just a lot of personalities this year in everybody, but it's a good blend and mixture of everybody. Like, no one takes it to the limit as far as, like, pushing it overboard or anything like that. You know, we just keep it fun, man. It's a long season.